Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. You got it right. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And it's so good to have everyone back. Come with me to San Francisco, he said, is extremely attractive. Mm-mm. Audio engineer. No? Don't want to go to San Francisco? Well, from the decline and fall file, out in San Francisco, Airmail News is reporting that dogs now outnumber children. Didn't we do this story like 2 years ago? That dogs outnumber children in San Francisco? Or maybe that was hyperbole 2 years ago. But now it's actually true. But that's not the only thing about this story. Number one, who's surprised that dogs now outnumber children in the city of San Francisco? That's not really surprising. But there's another annoying part of the story, less concerning from a civilizational point of view. But more annoying, because the author says that in San Francisco, dogs now outnumber children, and they're welcome nearly everywhere are the dogs. Not the children, the dogs. Dogs are welcome nearly everywhere, even with no pets allowed landlords. No pets allowed landlords. That's right. That can be done if the pooch is declared an emotional support animal, which was the case for every dog I encountered for this story, says the author. All dogs are emotional support animals. Why else would people let dogs hang around? They smell bad. They bring fleas. No, I'm a dog lover. Love dogs. Grew up with dogs. Don't want to offend any of our dog-loving audience members out there. Love dogs. Love them. But they're all emotional support animals. That's what they're for. That's what animals are. That's what domesticated animals are. And some livestock, as a matter of fact. Yeah. But, you know, I have been traveling a lot lately, and it is really annoying when some emotionally frail person has to have their dog on the plane. It's on every plane now. There's at least one dog. And it's just not right, okay? It annoys me. It bothers me. I don't like it. I don't like flying with animals. They should be in the hold, for crying out loud. It's a dog. All right. But hey, there you go. There's San Francisco, where we will not be going anytime soon. We're just doing a story from there. Now, speaking of San Francisco, from the Queering of America file, but for this one, it's not San Francisco. For here, we go right to the heartland, St. Louis, Missouri, because now San Francisco isn't the only place that's overflowing with queers and weirdos and creeps. St. Louis as well. In fact, this story is about a police officer. Yes, Sergeant Keith Wildhaber, a 15-year veteran on the force. Well, he applied for a promotion back in 2014, and he said that there was, shortly after Wildhaber applied, he said that there was one thing standing in his way of becoming a lieutenant. That's right. The County Board of Police allegedly told Wildhaber to please tone down your gayness. Oh, quote, tone down your gayness, is what the unquote. And he says that prevented him from becoming a lieutenant because apparently he's particularly flamboyant. And they asked him to tone it down a little bit, and now he sued them for $20 million, and he won. A jury sided with the homo and awarded him nearly $20 million, a judgment intended to send a message. Don't tell me to tone down my gayness. The jury's, we're just going to send a message. So they did. Let's see here. County officials there in St. Louis, Missouri, by the way. The county officials plan to take action, starting with the police department's leadership. Now, I wonder what that means. That's the end of the story. What are they? They're probably going to throw them into a dungeon. I don't know what they're... So we'll probably send them a dungeon of sensitivity training for... So here's the thing about gayness. All right. Is that once you declare that it's legal and that they have equal rights, well, you can't really tell them to tone it down after that. That's why it needs to be illegal. Because everyone on the St. Louis police force, well, I shouldn't say everyone, all the normal people on the St. Louis police force are grossed out by this flamboyant homo, all right? And everybody knows that it's gross and it's kind of disgusting that he's walking around flamboyant, lisping on everybody and standing at the water cooler with the lisp and you just want to get a drink and it turns your stomach. Could you just tone it down? No, they won't tone it down. They're going to tone it up, 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 higher and higher and higher. And that's why homosexuality should be illegal. That's all. Just like for the last 5,800 years of human history, except for brief periods before the collapse of major civilizations. It's the only time homosexuality was allowed out in public. All right. So get out of here, Sergeant Wildhaber, and your 15 years of lisping on the force. Get out of here. All right. In the meantime, we're going to go back to California for the justice file. That's right. Not that we're going to find any justice in California necessarily, but we're going to find a story that has something to do with justice. Let's see. Proposition 47. You people remember this, right? Proposition 47 was a referendum passed by the people of California. Well, I shouldn't say the people. The people who voted, which is probably a third of them aren't even citizens. A third of them probably don't even speak English. Had no idea what Proposition 47 was. There's only small enclaves of normal people left in California. And it's unfortunate that they're outnumbered by the illegal aliens and the aforementioned creeps and homos and weirdos and freaks, drug addicts. And that's just up in Sacramento. You start getting into Los Angeles and San Francisco, I mean, forget about it. Anyway, so the people who voted passed Prop 47, which basically said that if you steal less than $950 worth of stuff, that it's no longer a felony, it's a misdemeanor. And a lot of times you just get a ticket, a citation, for stealing $950 worth of stuff. This was an effort at justice reform out in California. And they had problems with all the money it was costing, and the jails were too full, and they were running out of room for all the assault and murder and rape cases because there were so many thieves in jail. And so what's the solution? Well, let's just legalize some thievery, at least a goodly portion of it. Or, well, not legalize it, but let's minimize the criminality of it so we can just clear out the catalog. So we can maybe get to all the rapists and murderers. So anyways, they did it, all right? So I believe I reported on this story at the time that this would be a problem. If I didn't, well, I'm sure I did. You can go back to, 5 years ago? Go back in the archives and listen to all the shows from 2014. And I can assure you in one of them I will have addressed this issue. Because there's no way this got past me. Although I wasn't really paying all that much attention to California back then. So it's possible if the only reason I wouldn't have reported on this is because it slipped past the goalie theirs. The Prop 47, by the way, was championed by the American Civil Liberties Union, as you can well imagine. And who is this? Fox News reports that it passed by a wide margin in 2014. I slip into my what's his name? Biff Wallace? Dave Wallace? I can't remember his name. Steve Wallace? His name. Anyway, I'll slip right into that whenever I see Fox News. Yeah. So anyway, it passed by a wide margin there in 2014. Cress Wallace, excuse me, sir. Thank you. Let's see here. Now, 5 years later, here we are. San Francisco now has the highest rate of property crime of any of America's top 20 largest cities. It's the worst. And we're talking theft, shoplifting and vandalism, and a lot of it is shoplifting. Brazen, broad daylight shoplifting right in front of God and everyone because you don't even care. Because you can get the $950 worth of stuff into someone else's hands and maybe you get a ticket for it. Maybe you get arrested, maybe, but it's a misdemeanor. You're out on $150 bail, and you got $950 worth of stuff. Do the math. You sell it for half price. You buy the crystal meth with what you end up with some money left at the end of the day. I mean, criminals aren't idiots. So they just do the math, and it's worth it now. So here we've got a 7-Eleven owner down in San Diego, Jossie Dillon. This poor guy says it's happening every day, hour by hour. He says shoplifting isn't a priority to law enforcement anymore. And when the cops do show up, the shoplifter has left the store or he isn't concerned about the citation he may be issued. There you go. So how do you run a 7-Eleven in California? Well, I'll tell you, it's gotten to be like Guatemala. That's so stores, retailers are hiring private security guards for a 7-Eleven in America. You know, I went to Guatemala a few years back, and I remember walking past a shop or a doorway in the town square, and there was a man standing there with a shotgun. And I asked my business associate, I said, "Is that the bank?" He said, "No, that's the grocery store." I was like, "Wow, man, things are rough around here." Well, welcome to San Diego. Welcome to San Francisco, Los Angeles, Sacramento. Name one, Fresno, everywhere, Bakersfield. You're going to have an armed guard in front of your 7-Eleven or the shoplifters and the people who vote in California are going to drive you out of business. Anyway, so there is an effort on to repeal Proposition 47. But the damage is done. It's hard to come back from something like this. And the people who vote in California are fairly easily manipulated, apparently. And not all that bright, it seems. Or maybe just not that literate, at least in the English language. Although I think they print everything in Spanish out there. And Chinese, and Vietnamese, and Cambodian, Romanian, Portuguese. I think everything, you name it out there. So there, I guess there's no excuse with the language. I think everybody just wanted to feel good about themselves and say, boy, all these property crimes, these are nonviolent crimes. Come on. And so they did it. But the places, obviously, the people there are insane, at least the majority of voters in California. They've lost their minds. They've lost their way. They have no idea that they're about to destroy one of the finest places on the planet. But don't worry, because small enclave, little pockets of normalcy will continue to exist, mostly out where there are farms. Mostly, yeah. Okay, now, meanwhile, speaking of farms, let's go to Michigan, where they have lots of farms. And they also have property tax. Yes, property tax. I don't know if there's a state in the union that doesn't have property tax. Is that possible? I'll have to check that in the break. But property tax is immoral. It's basically paying the government to rent the dirt for life. Not just for life. If you leave your property to your kids, they never pay off the property tax. They have to rent that dirt from the government for life, and that's immoral. Well, out in, let's see here. This was in Oakland County, Michigan. An 83-year-old retiree underpaid his property taxes by $8.41. I said $8.41. Oakland County seized his property, auctioned it off, and raked in about $24,000 for the property that this poor fella originally paid $60,000 for. The county auctions it off for $24,000 and stiffs this guy with nothing. Uri Raffaelli is the fella's name. He lost his property and all of the equity associated with it. Unbelievable. Today, the estimate online for his property is over $100,000. But Uri lost all of that due to the immoral governing officials in Michigan who are basically stealing from the people all the time. Just like the poor slob in San Diego is going to lose his 7-Eleven because our country, our states, our counties, our cities, they're all being run by the criminally insane. And it's about time somebody did something about it. And I'm glad you're tuning in here, because here we will not only find the problems, we will also suggest to you the solution. going, but we got to come back. We got to come back. All right. So they did Uri dirty out there in Michigan, and all the shop owners out in California. So what's the solution? What is the solution? Okay, so let me give you just a really quick, okay? There's a real simple solution to this. Number one, we need to reset the government. So we should have a national lottery to pick a new king. We could call him the president. If the word king makes you uncomfortable, we'll call him the president. We'll select a new president, right? And it's a lottery. And I guarantee you, there's no way we could pick anyone worse than Gavin Newsom or whoever's in charge of Michigan. From the governor all on down. There's no way, even by accident, we could find someone worse. By the way, anyone in the government now is not allowed to be in the, is not allowed to be a candidate, a member of the lottery there. Not allowed. That's right. So we have a lottery, and we pick a new president. And you have to be a landowner, right? And you have to be married, and you have to have children. Those are the only three qualifications. That's it. You have to own your own land, children, married, okay, right? So we pick this new guy. Now, he has the authority to appoint a governor in every state, and the governor has authority to appoint a mayor in every city, and we do it all by lottery, or I don't know. We could figure that out. We could do it all by lottery, or the president could appoint the governor, could appoint the mayors, could appoint the city council. There's no way we could do worse than this, right? And the whole time, the status quo, just we start rewriting it, okay, by normal, non-criminally insane people, okay? I guarantee you it would work out better than what's going on right now, because we're careening right now toward catastrophe. That's what we're doing. We're careening back and forth, sliding, gliding, out of control toward catastrophic, devastation. All right. So there's your answer. At least I'm willing to start the conversation about changing things, because what we're doing right now is simply not working. All right. And one fine example of that was Lamar Odom. Lamar Odom, you'll remember, was a Los Angeles Laker, a basketball player. Odom was temporarily placed in a medically induced coma in 2015 after being found on the verge of an overdose death. Found unconscious at death's door because he became a drug addict, because the lawyers, the criminally insane lawyers who run our country, have decided for some reason to tolerate drugs. And so Odom got hooked on drugs, and he ended up almost dead. And I remember reporting on this, thinking that the guy was going to die. And I hadn't, I was not familiar with him. It was just a very sad, sad story. Well, he took to Instagram this past week, and he says, "Nowadays, I'm doing the best I can. I'm walking with the Lord. I got saved," says Lamar Odom. And so his pastor went and said that, he's not the Christian he wants to be, but we're trying to find him a good local church, and encouraged him to read the Bible at least 20 minutes a day and commit himself to Jesus Christ through prayer. And so there's the other answer, by the way. It's not just the government. The answer is to read the Bible every day and commit yourself to Jesus Christ through prayer. There's the answer that will stop us from careening toward catastrophe and maybe save that guy's 7-Eleven out there in San Diego if enough of us would read the Bible every day and commit ourselves to Jesus Christ through prayer. That would solve not all the problems. It would solve the vast majority of the insane problems. Oh, it would solve all of the criminally insane problems. Because, I mean, Christians can do some pretty messed up things, but they're generally not criminally insane. And then wanting to pass laws to make everyone else criminally insane. All right. So, meanwhile, speaking of Christians, we may have located a Christian in the Catholic Church. I know. No, there are some. And I think Father Robert Morey at Florence, at Catholic Church in Florence, South Carolina, might be a Christian. You might be a Christian if. That's almost like a joke, right? It's a punchline. If you deny Joe Biden communion, you might be a Christian. All right. So Father Robert Morey denied communion to Joe Biden. I think this was a couple of Sundays ago. And so let's see here. He says he denied him communion because of his stance on abortion. And now, it's not clear. Let me see here. Let's see. The father says, Fatimori. I think that's how you pronounce that. The official pronunciation of a Catholic priest is Fata. Fatimori says that any public figure who advocates for abortion places himself outside of the church teaching. And he says, as a priest, it is my responsibility to minister even in the most difficult of situations. I will keep Mr. Biden in my prayers, says Fatimori. Yes. And so Joe Biden. Now listen to this. This is from South Carolina Now. I don't know. It's probably a local news outlet there. The Biden campaign would not confirm if he had even attended that church, but I can assure you he did. And the South Carolina Now says Biden's position on abortion is unclear. Really? It's unclear? Did he not serve as the vice president for Barack Obama for 8 years? And then for about 30 before that, didn't he vote for almost every, well, eventually every, I think he voted for every budget that funded the killing of innocent children. I believe Joe Biden voted for all of them because he's been in the Senate since I don't can't even remember when he was not. So his position on abortion is not unclear, at least not to Fatimori. He knew. He's no dummy. What do you people think we're idiots out here? You think that just because Joe Biden isn't a frothing at the mouth abortionist like Barack Obama or Michelle Obama or Hillary Clinton or Mitt Romney, just because he's not like maniacally, you know, like wanting to fund every abortion, he's still a we know what he is. He's a child killing lying thief, is Joe Biden, and he certainly shouldn't get communion if the Catholic Church has any standards. And apparently out at I did give the name of this church here. Should I give the name of the church? Well, they just say it's a Roman Catholic church. So they're St. Anthony Catholic Church, Florence, South Carolina. Apparently they still have some standards out there. And so hat tip to Fatimori for at least for at least towing the line when it's appropriate, even when you know you're going to take a lot of heat for it. Because Joe Biden's position on abortion is obviously it's unclear. Fada. All right. And so now we go. Let's see. What do we have time? We have time. We are going to go from the Catholic Church, St. Anthony's even, out to the science, really, file, where we're going to meet Sean Carroll, a theoretical physicist. A theoretical physicist. Now, that doesn't mean that he's only a physicist in theory. That means that he specializes in theoretical physics, which are physics that have not been proven to be true yet, which is quite a dubious thing. But there you have it. He has a position at the California Institute of Technology, which we would assume is somewhere in California. And he's written a book, and so the Next Web got an article here on him. He suggests, here's the suggestion of Sean Carroll, a theoretical physicist. He says that every fundamental, I can't learn how to talk. So the thing is, we've been doing physical labor all day. And so it's hard for me to switch from the physical labor grunting caveman ape to trying to think. It's hard for me to shift that. I need a torque converter in my brain housing group or something. All right. So there was the transition. That was the segue I needed to pull me in. He suggests, does theoretical physicist Sean Carroll at California Institute of Technology, that every fundamental event has multiple possible outcomes and splits the world into alternate realities. That's his suggestion. Basically, he's saying everything that happens 100,000 different ways, maybe an infinite number of different ways, in an infinite number of different universes, involving an infinite number of me, an infinite number of this desk, an infinite number of this soundboard. That's what he suggests. And you've heard this before, the multiverse. We've reported on it. This is just the latest article that the left-biased media churns out all the time around this idea. The idea originally came out in the 50s when some grad student wrote a paper that should have been just ignored. The theory describes the universe as a changing set of numbers known as the wave function that evolves according to a single equation. The universe continually splits into new branches to produce multiple versions of ourselves, says theoretical physicist Sean Carroll. He argues that this interpretation is the simplest possible explanation of quantum mechanics. That's what he says, that because we don't fully comprehend quantum mechanics, Sean Carroll says that we have to dive headfirst into the irrational and accept the absurd because, well, we don't understand everything about quantum physics, and quantum physics is difficult. It's difficult to understand, okay? Because quantum mechanics seems to suggest that things, quantum particles, things possess different states of being at the same time. And they seem to behave differently when they're just out there doing their thing. They behave differently when you measure them. And it's really hard to get your head around. And so what is Sean Carroll's solution? Madness. What's happening is every moment is splitting into another universe and another world and another desk and another reality. And there's lots of me and there's lots of you. And this is just one reality. And there are many others. Which is just insanity. Now, I don't think that we have to, I don't think we have to appeal to madness to understand quantum physics. I don't fully understand it yet, but my guess is that the reason things appear that way to us is because we're observing them in the physical world, and that there is some spiritual element that we don't yet fully comprehend, and we may not be able to comprehend until we cross over to the other side. There's some spiritual thing happening that confuses us, but at least that's not insanity, that there's some spiritual element to the physical universe that holds things together and grants things their state of being and possibilities. Anyway, at least it's not total insanity thinking that every moment the universe splits into another universe and nothing is real because there's all these different realities. Mr. Carroll, theoretical physicist, just a note. All this is real, Sean. This is all real. There's only one reality and this is it. And you're only going once around the ride, Sean. This is it. And you are going to actually be held responsible for everything you say and do. You will not be allowed to appeal to stupidity, silliness, or madness on Judgment Day. No, it's not going to be a theoretical thing either, Sean. Judgment Day is going to be real. So you need to step back from the edge of insanity and figure out spirituality, or you're going to end up just going straight to hell with jet rockets. Don't jump in. He's just going to go on like that for like 7 minutes. And the drums are just really, I mean, it's anyway. Now, speaking of all of that, Kathmandu and all that, and the train to Bangkok, watching TV the other night, when on the screen appears one Tammy Bruce on Fox News. Tammy Bruce, I said, whom I extremely attractive audio engineer simply calls Bruce. That's it. She just calls him Bruce. Her Bruce. I think she could go either way. So anyway, I don't know exactly what Tammy Bruce was talking about. I do believe it was the impeachment. Why do I think that? Because that's all anyone on Fox News talks about anytime. I mean, unless a plane or a train crashes, they'll talk about that for like 30 seconds. But other than that, it's the impeachment. And so I think she was talking about the impeachment. By the way, this coming week, speaking of madness, impeachment madness will be upon us. And so what I've done is I have booked myself so much work this week that I will not be able to pay attention. And I'm going to come out the other end a week from now, and I'll let you know what I think at that point. I've decided to just purge. You can laugh louder than that if you want. My extremely attractive audio engineer is somewhat tuckered out by the enormous amount of physical labor we have put in over the past 48 hours. It's just astonishing. So we have this deck. This deck was in such bad shape that you couldn't walk on it with shoes on because you could still get a sliver. That's how bad the deck was, right? And so we resurfaced and painted that deck over the past 2 days. And let's just say that we're not getting any younger, and physical labor is not getting any easier. Although there was a certain amount of satisfaction at the end when we got to walk around on our deck and realize how nice it was. I was supposed to get back to Bruce. Bruce, Tammy Bruce, on Fox News, squawking about something having to do with the impeachment. She uttered this statement. She said, quote, "Process is what leads us to the truth," unquote. I think one of the other talking heads said that the Democrats' process for this impeachment is un-American, unconstitutional, it's a kangaroo court, and I agree with all that. That's beside the point, though. Because as a very wise man told me at the beginning of this whole impeachment, I don't know what you want to call it. I guess this impeachment reality, this particular impeachment reality, which obviously could go another way. All right, let's not descend into madness. That there is no process answer to this impeachment situation. The answer, the solution, the how America survives this is not going to be found in the process. No. Now, it could be found in the unmasking of the Democrats as criminally insane people by the process that they follow. Now, that's a possibility, but it's not going to be the process itself, okay? And I was enlightened by that statement. And so I have been trying to focus not on process issues related to this. I guess it's not an impeachment yet. Anyway, whatever. I'm just going to use impeachment because it's easy to wrap my head and my lips around at this moment. But so Tammy Bruce on Fox News says process is what leads us to the truth, unquote. And that is where Tammy Bruce is incorrect. Process is not what leads us to the truth, Tammy. Seeking the truth is what leads us to the truth, Tammy. Whether it's seeking the truth for a particular situation or a particular problem, or just seeking God in general. Seeking God leads us to the truth. But it's seeking the truth that leads us to the truth. It's not the process, Tammy. It's seeking the truth. And the truth is, or I suppose what I want to find out is it true that Donald Trump tried to get dirt on Joe Biden from some comedian in, where was it? Azerbaijan? I can't remember. Ukraine. Sorry. Comedian in Ukraine. Did Donald Trump try to dig up dirt on Joe Biden? And that's just this particular situation, because I have a number of other things I'd like to bring up with Mr. Trump regarding his fitness for office. And A phone call with some comedian in Ukraine is not even in the top 100. So, all right. So there you go. Tammy Bruce, please just shut your mouth. Just leave us alone. She's gross. So here's the thing about Tammy Bruce. I did not know she was a homo until recently. And I thought she was, I guess I never really thought that much about her. But now she creeps me out. And she was guest hosting for someone the other day. That's like a full hour of, ew, yuck. Man. All right. What's that? She guest hosting for Don Lemon?
No, it's like no? Watching
Don Lemon. That's it, right? It's like, no, you're not going to watch Tucker Carlson. You're going to watch Don Lemon for an hour. Yeah. Oh, man. All right. Meanwhile, I already did this story. I already did all these stories. Oh, no, I grabbed the wrong stack. I grabbed my done stack, and I switched it with my not done yet stack. And I'm glad I noticed that. Because, you know, I'm not getting any younger. I'm not as sharp as I used to be. I'm glad I didn't just start going through all those stories again and just not know it. And then at the end, my extremely attractive audio engineer. No, you would miss it too.
Yeah.
It's the physical labor, folks. I'm telling you, all the blood is in our muscles and not in our brains right now. We need to, all right. So let's see here. Now we're going to go to the human beings as property file. That's too long a name for a file. I'm going to go, this is the personhood file, actually. I see it now. This comes from the personhood file. By the way, if you're not familiar with the concept of personhood, it's a simple concept. It is that the moment you come into existence as a unique individual, you have all the rights of any other human person. I don't even have to say human. Every other person. You have the right to life, liberty, and property. Okay? And due process and, yeah, I think that's life and liberty, yeah, and property. All right? So it's a real simple concept. And if you draw the line anywhere else from the moment you come into existence, then you could be incorrect about that. And what if you are? And then you assent to someone being destroyed in a state beyond where or before where you drew the line, but beyond where God draws the line, right? So I believe God draws the line at the moment you come into existence. How do I know that? Because where else are you going to draw the line if you're a righteous God? Where else? Okay. And so I'm sure that that's where God draws the line. So that's where I draw the line. Not because I'm any better than you, if you disagree. It's just that I think God's better than you. So I'm going to agree with him. And then, hey, if it ends up God doesn't exist, then, well, that's just not possible. And I think we've already gone over that. So let's not descend into madness any longer. Let's get on with the news. From the personhood file, a court has decided that an agreement... Let me start over again, okay? I think I feel the blood surging into my cerebral cortex. A court has decided that an agreement a couple made... Okay, that's the problem. All right. Let me fix this, all right? Here we go. A court has decided that an agreement a couple made prior to creating embryos, an agreement that provided for the destruction of the embryos in the event of a divorce, is an enforceable contract between Jessica and Timothy. Uh-huh. So basically, they had a prenup. Or maybe it was a postnup, I don't know. But they had an agreement before they went in for fertility treatment that if they got divorced, which it was obvious to them and everyone else that that was going to happen. I mean, why else do you have an agreement saying in the event of divorce XYZ unless it's like obvious to everyone that you're going to get a divorce? I mean, I could not have a relationship based on, okay, well, let's sign a contract. I mean, what is that? I feel really sorry for these people. There's very sad existence. But anyway, they had a contract that said, if we divorce, which they should have just said when we divorce, if these embryos have not been implanted, and then we're going to destroy them. Well, what happened was the husband changed his mind. During the divorce, he said he changed his mind. He wanted to preserve the embryos. Because they might reconcile. Uh-huh. And in the alternative, he wanted them donated to another couple that could have a child or children. So maybe he had a change of heart. Maybe instead of treating human beings as property, which is basically what he and his wife had agreed to do. And a court agreed with them, by the way. A court, the state Supreme Court in Connecticut, the state Supreme Court agreed with this couple that they would treat these people as property, which has been illegal in America since 1860, whatever, since the Civil War, okay? You're not supposed to be able to treat people as property. But here we are today treating human beings as property. This couple agreed to it, then a court agreed to it, and now the husband has a change of heart. He realizes these are people. And the wife says, no, I want them destroyed, and the judge says, kill them. No, the judge doesn't say kill them. The judge says, destroy this property in accordance with this enforceable contract. Throughout the decision, the court refers consistently to the embryos as pre-embryos, which is an interesting turn of a phrase, pre-embryos. Well, where does that come from? Well, the court says that pre-embryo, well, it's a medically accurate term. It refers to a fertilized egg that has not been implanted in a uterus. That's a pre-embryo. It's legitimate. It's medically accurate, says the court. They say, it's medically accepted that an embryo properly develops only after implantation. So before that, it's a pre-embryo. Closing their eyes, sticking their fingers in their ears. So here's what I guess when I read that when I read this paragraph, I said, I will bet you the pre-embryo term, this idea of pre-embryo, it was invented sometime after 1974. That's just my guess, okay? So I did the research, folks. I had the crack research stash, reached way back, and they contributed a story, again, to the Science Really file, where we go to the Croatian Medical Journal. Croatian. Yeah, this is from NCBI, NIH.gov, that place where all the clinical studies are, right? NCBI.NLM.NIH.gov, because it's a government thing. So there has to be at least three dots before you get to. Anyway, so this is the name of this paper. This is a clinical paper dated October 2016. And it is a clinical paper that refers to where this term pre-embryo came from. So other researchers were researching this while I was researching it. Actually 3 years before. So these Croatians entitled the paper, "The Change of Definitions in a Multidisciplinary Landscape, the Case of Human Embryo and Pre-Embryo Identification." And in the paper, I will link to it. I'll just excerpt it. A human embryo, which from the scientific point of view is identified according to objective features may assume different identities according to its fate. How about that? So depending on what they're going to do with the embryo, they call it something different. In 1978, in the UK, the Warnock Committee was established to inquire into the ethical, scientific, and legal implications of assisted reproductive technologies, which is fertility treatment. In vitro was coming and all that. The committee, even never using the term pre-embryo, in July 1984, laid the foundations of the notion of timing for indicating the stages of development to be considered with regard to the regulation of in vitro embryos for research purposes. So they basically moved the line from where it had always been in medicine. It was called conception, which was the moment a person came into existence, and they moved conception to implantation, you see, and they did this in 1984. They didn't do this, Hippocrates didn't do this, okay? No, this came in 1984, long after the Western democracies and the whole world really had started legalizing the murder of innocent children. And to ameliorate the enormous amount of guilt that would build up if they just admitted they were killing people, they simply changed the definition. And now then the medical community developed this term pre-embryo. And now we've got courts actually quoting it as if it's real. And it's not real. It's all a part of this descent into madness. It's all a part of this criminally insane mentality that is every day marching, taking more people, claiming more victims. Well, I will not stand by and allow the criminally insane to practice their insanity without at least standing up and saying something about it. And wherever I can, and I encourage you as well, Do something about it. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. I'm back. And, you know, it's been a very serious show. I want to do something funny, but I don't know. Things aren't always funny, that's all. Into the Mad New World file. Planned Parenthood in New York is now offering transgender hormones. Yes. Got a press release from Planned Parenthood of New York City, where they say gender-affirming hormone therapy is now available at health centers in Manhattan, Queens, the Bronx, and Brooklyn. Yeah, that's right. So Planned Parenthood now, in addition to killing innocent children, it says it's part of their larger mission to provide quality, compassionate care to the people they don't murder. Uh-huh. And that includes transgender and gender transgender and gender non-binary New Yorkers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they call it gender-affirming hormone therapy. Isn't that interesting? That's very Orwellian, because the hormones are designed to transition the person away from the gender that they actually are, and they call it gender-affirming, which, again, that is one more piece of evidence that these people are criminally insane. And the doors of Planned Parenthood in New York should be kicked in by the authorities. Everyone there should be arrested and put on trial. That's what should happen. That's what should happen to the criminally insane. But until we do the whole lottery and clear out all these insane people, I don't know how we reset this outside of, I don't know how we get from here to the lottery. That's the problem, see? Could be a lot of ugliness in between. I'm not really up for that. Although, if it comes to it, you know, I'll just stand on the right side. That's all. That's all. You got to be on the right side. You got to find out what God thinks and stand on his side, even if it gets lonely or even if it puts you in danger, frankly, which eventually it's going to do, because the criminally insane eventually start victimizing the sane. That always happens. So how long until this criminal insanity affects you or I directly, immediately, like existentially? Because right now we're just talking about it. But eventually these mad, insane criminal people, all right, I've said it. Let's go back to the science. Really? File. Where 40 years ago, according to Bloomberg, Bloomberg, by the way, he's running for president, but we don't care. This is the Bloomberg News Service. 40 years ago, scientists converged on Geneva to discuss the CO2 climate problem. That's right. They predicted global warming would eventually become a major environmental challenge. Let's do the math, kiddos. 50 years ago was 1969, which was the last major wave of criminal insanity that somehow managed to peak and then ebb for a little while anyways. They predicted global warming. Yeah. Okay. So they got to work building a strategy. Okay. A strategy, I said, laying the groundwork for the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the world's preeminent body of climate scientists. It's preeminent, you know, really, preeminent. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change is the most discredited organization in the history of such things. We all read the emails, guys. We all read that. You can't say that these are this preeminent body of climate scientists. No, we're not buying that anymore. We're not criminally insane. We have a memory that goes back further than 10 years. But when you're criminally insane, you just keep marching. You just keep going. And you double down and up the ante every time. Huh? Oh, you're going to let the homos march in the streets? How about we're going tranny now? How about that? Now, what's next after tranny? I don't even want to go there. But back to the climate. Now, 4 decades later, scientists are sounding a much more urgent alarm. Yes, more than 1,100 expats. They're calling for fewer humans on the planet. That's the strategy includes fewer human beings. Oh, also getting rid of fossil fuels, instituting renewable energy. But then there's the fewer human beings issue. Let's talk about that. We declare, say the 1,100 experts, quote, we declare clearly and unequivocally that planet Earth is facing a climate emergency. That was published in the journal Bioscience. I don't know if it was published with the accent or without. It may have been. The scientists, call to quickly implement systemic change to energy, food, and economic policies. Now, they've been doing that. You know, we know about that with the Green New Deal and all the whacked-out millennial cretins in Congress. So we've heard all that before. But now they go one step further. The population, they say, must be stabilized and ideally gradually reduced. Ideally. Gradually. Don't want to alarm anyone. Be gradual, of course. Except for the people we actually kill. It'll be fairly immediate for them. But the statistical difference will be gradual, you see. I have an idea. Let's start with these 1,100 scientists. I'm all for a reduction in that population because criminally insane people who publicly state that they want to kill other innocent people, they should be arrested and executed if they're convicted. If they actually publish this if they actually put their hand to paper and signed off on this, to me, that's a threat against innocent people. Let's start with you guys. You could be the first 1,100. In fact, if you weren't hypocrites, you would have all already committed suicide. So you're just a bunch of hypocrites, you know, and so let's just move on. What more do you want to say? Ronan Farron says that Bill Clinton was credibly accused of rape by Juanita Broder. Oh, congratulations, Ronan. You're obviously a genius. No, we're actually happy to hear that Ronan is calling for a reinvestigation, but I'm just not going to hold my breath. Ronan Farrow, he was asked by Bill Maher if Bill Clinton could have survived what he did in today's Me Too environment. Could Bill Maher survive? How does Bill Maher survive in today's Me Too? I mean, how come Bill Maher hasn't been... Speaking of investigations, Ronan, you're sitting right there across from a... All right, well, you know, whatever. So he asked Bill Maher, could Clinton survive? Maher said, not Maher, Ronan Farrow. They shouldn't call him Ronan Farrow. They should call him Ronan Brando, obviously. Yeah. But they don't. They call him Ronan Farrow just because, I don't know, that's his mom's name. It's kind of weird. Anyway, but Mr. Now I've lost my train of thought. You see, this is what it is. All the blood is in my biceps, in my triceps, in my pectorals. From all that physical labor, my brain's in second gear. My body was cruising in fifth gear at 80 miles an hour down the highway all day, but my brain's stuck in second gear, and I just can't figure it out. Anyway, Mr. Brando answered, and he said, I think the Juanita Broderick claim has been overdue for revisiting. Uh-oh. Yeah. So how did Bill Maher allow this to be said on television? Look out, Bill. Bill might be found hung in his cell, or hanging somewhere, having committed suicide unexpectedly in some odd fashion. Bill, how could you allow this to happen? Hey, Bill, I thought we had a deal, buddy. Come on, man. You can't be letting that little Brando kid ask that kind of stuff on your show. Come on, man. All right, so there we go. I hope Mr. Brando will look into this. Because obviously, if anyone could get something close to approaching justice for Juanita Broderick, it would be Ronan Brando. More power to you, kiddo. All right. Meanwhile, Jeffrey Epstein. Who is this guy? I just can't think. I shouldn't have even done the show today. I should have taken the day off. So there's a forensic pathologist, and he's very famous, but I neglected to put his name in the story because I don't know why. Because I'm obviously, I'm off my game. But he says that the body of Jeffrey Epstein bore telltale signs of homicide. Yes, a pioneering forensic pathologist revealed this to Fox and Friends, but I forgot to write the guy's name down. I really feel bad about that. Anyway, two fractures on the left and right side of his larynx, specifically the thyroid cartilage or Adam's apple, and one fracture on the left hyoid bone. This Dr. Baden, there it is. At least I got his last name in. Dr. Baden or Baden, B-A-D-A-N, B-A-D-E-N, I'm sorry. See, I can't even read. He says that, by the way, he's famous. And he's been involved in all kinds of O.J. Simpson, John Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Phil Spector. He's been involved in all kinds of big cases. He says those three fractures are extremely unusual in suicide hangings and could occur much more commonly in homicidal strangulation. You know what the problem is here? Is that there's too many qualifiers in Dr. Baden's statements. So I still don't know what happened to this guy. Because he says they're extremely unusual, which means they do happen. They're just unusual. And he said they could occur much more commonly. All right, so we don't know what happened to Jeffrey Epstein still. All right? The one thing we know is he's dead and in hell right now. That's the only thing we know. I guess the only thing we know is that he's dead. Oh, and that he won't be molesting any more high school girls. Dr. Baden does say, I've not seen in 50 years where that occurred in a suicidal hanging case, which means other people might have. So we still don't know what's going on with that. All right, let's just move on. Meanwhile, death row inmate Rodney Reed is supposed to be executed here in a few days. But he's been on death row for 21 years, which is about right anymore. It's sickening that anyone would be on death row that long. 1996 murder of Stacy Stites. He's scheduled to be executed in Texas in less than a month. His legal team says, well, new developments in the case, they exonerate him, Your Honor. You see, the female victim's fiancé, you see, he may have been involved. Uh-huh. So how can you say that developments exonerate if someone may have been involved? Okay, you can say that if you're a lawyer, but I only buy it if I'm a dummy, and I'm not a dummy, okay? You don't know exactly what happened, and this guy was convicted of murder. So here's what was going on, ladies and gentlemen. Rodney Reed was cheating with Stacy Stites. They were having an affair because Stacy was engaged to Jimmy Fennell. And so this guy's trying to say that, hey, I was having an affair with this guy's fiance, and that's why he killed her. That's what this convicted murderer is trying to say. Now, how many years later? 21 years later, when probably a plurality of witnesses in the case are dead, and the rest of them have no recollection of what happened. But that's what he's saying. He's claiming he was sleeping with an engaged woman, and the fiancé killed the woman. I think it's more likely that he would have killed you. Here's the deal here. The murderer, he's convicted. I'll just say it. Reed, the murderer, is black. He was convicted by an all-white jury. Oh, well, they're right there. Obviously, he's innocent. Come on. Let's see. He's been appealing his convictions from 2001 through 2015. He's found support with local politicians and activists, Kim Kardashian, and others. Let's see, the Innocence Project, of course, Barry Sheck and his Sheck and Jive operation, trying to get convicted murderers off. Let's see. All right, so that's it. So the bottom line is you should be executed for sleeping with an engaged woman, Mr. Reed. Unfortunately, that law is not on the books, but it is a law. It's just not on the books in the state of Texas anymore, but you shouldn't be sleeping with an engaged woman, and for doing that, you deserve the death penalty. So six of one, half a dozen the other, it doesn't matter to me, as long as you are dispatched as soon as possible to Judgment Day. Thank you very much. All right. Now, what do we want to do here? Reason number 1216 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. Math and reading scores for fourth and eighth graders have dropped since 2017, and government researchers are particularly concerned. Government researchers... Well, what about parents? Aren't parents particularly concerned? You know, I don't think they are. Because, I mean, you got drag queen story hour, and you've got, you've basically got an educational institution teaching your children things that are antithetical to everything you know and hold to be true. And yet you send your kids there every day. So I'm guessing that the math and reading scores just aren't that high on the radar for most parents. I mean, even Christian parents. Anyway, they did a test to more than 600,000 schools enrolled in public schools. Oh, and Catholic schools. Even the Catholics are sliding. What's up with that? That's because they won't let them whack the kid in the knuckles anymore. The kids are just going nuts. Right? And then, of course, there's all the... Well, let's just leave that aside. More importantly than the scores themselves, says U.S. News and World Report, is what's happening among subgroups. So this is how everything looks to the criminally insane who are not only running this country, but are reporting on everything that happens in this country. They're also criminally insane madmen. Criminally insane madmen not only run the government, they also run the news media. Because here's what U.S. News and World Report... I don't know. I remember when I was a teenager, my dad got U.S. News and World Report, and I used to read it just so I could find out about grown-up stuff. And I don't know if they were liberal back then. They reported on, like, business stuff and, you know, geopolitics stuff. But now, U.S. News and World Report talks about a precipitous drop in math and reading skills. By the way, it's not just scores, it's skills. And what do they say? They say, more importantly than the scores themselves... is what happened among subgroups. Yes, how the scores of poor students compared to their wealthier peers, and how students from different races scored. Why would that matter if you're reporting on a across-the-board drop in math and reading skills at the hands of the public and Catholic schools? What does it matter that what happened with this race or that race or this guy's mom and dad made this much money, this kid's mom and dad live in a poor zip code? I think you're all insane. And I think I've said that too much, see? All right, what more can you say about that? Speaking of insanity, you all remember when Barack Obama nearly doubled the national debt, raising it by almost $9 trillion? Well, The Hill reports, and remember how the Republicans used that as an election campaign issue, and the Tea Party was born, and boy, we're going to do something about this debt, boy. They even forced a government shutdown in 2013. I remember I was there. Yes, one of the central tenets of the Republican Party has been a commitment to fiscal conservatism, low taxes, low debt, and small government. Well, this year, the U.S. national debt is roughly $22 trillion. Yes, we once derided Obama as the king of debt, says The Hill. But Trump seems to have inherited the mantle, and he's carrying it forward on towards his destiny. I don't know why I did that. All right, that's it, I guess. That's the end of the show. I want to thank you all for tuning in. I want to thank my friends at Real Science Radio and at AmericanRightToLife.com. And, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.